It's time to talk about Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. And now, here's Ira.
This week on Talk About Las Vegas, I'm talking with jazz pianist, vocalist, and bandleader Danny Sinoff. He's a performer who brings the great American songbook to life with style, swing, and storytelling. And he has his roots in the tradition of legends like Sinatra and Oscar Peterson, career that's taken him from New York's iconic stages to festivals across the country. Danny treats piano and voice as two instruments in conversation. And now he's bringing that signature sound to Vic's Las Vegas this Friday and Saturday, May 1st and 2nd at 7:30 and 9. And for reservations, go to VicsLasVegas.com, VicsLasVegas.com. For everything about Danny, go to DannySinoffMusic.com. You can follow him on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. And his new album is called Make Someone Happy. So you're making us happy by being here. Welcome. Thank you.
I hope so. I'm happy to be here.
Excellent. Well, we were talking right before we started. There's someone that we mutually know. He's been on the show before, and you work closely with him, which is Benny. And he's on that album, Make Someone Happy.
Yes, my good friend, Benny Benack III, who's been so very gracious to me this last year. Leading up to it, he came down to where I live in Florida to play at the London Club, where I've been performing for a few years now. Had pretty much a residency there. And that's how we met. And of course, I knew him from his enormous online presence. And we started talking about suits and other things like that. And we connected through that. And he's brought me to New York. He's helped me come here to Vegas. He's helped me get to Philadelphia. And he's also on the debut album, on my new album. And he wrote a great vocalese. As you know, Benny's known for his vocalese, his amazing vocalese.
Right.
For a tune, All I Need Is the Girl, from a show called Gypsy that is on the album. And it's a really nice back and forth between him and I, sort of like he's my wingman at a dance or something like that. And like, you know, All I Need Is the Girl, and he's helping me get the girl. It's a very clever and very swing and very happy little thing he put together for us. And I'm just thrilled to have him on the album.
I'm dressed up like a million bucks, but with the ladies, I have no luck. I'm cursed, I don't know what to do. Well, Danny, let me tell ya, you have got to get your mindset right. You could find your soulmate here tonight. How about her? I think she's here alone. She's swell, just don't end up friend zone. All right, okay, you win, I'll try. She can't say no to that suit and tie. Oh, Danny boy, the time is now, so don't delay. I'm gonna do it, nothing's in my way.
Danny has that level of energy that I only aspire to. I've never had it in my entire life, nor I think have you.
He's a different creature. That is for sure. That is for sure. And he's a born entertainer. 100%.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Well, let's talk about you. You were born in Newton, Massachusetts. You were raised in Naples, Florida. That's quite a shift. Here's the interesting part, and correct me if I'm wrong. You began playing classical, or you're taking classical music lessons at the age of four?
I started playing. My parents sat me down at the piano. I was probably four or five. You know, as a lot of 80s kids, you know, everybody did piano lessons, or their parents would try them on piano lessons, you know, and I was one of those kids. And so I was very young when I started. I remember it though. I remember sitting on the bench at that age.
It's amazing. And then
you were a private teacher and all that sort of thing.
Oh, listen, that's great. Not everybody can get that. So
that's true.
And then you started professionally at the age of 13, which again is a relatively young age. There are people that start earlier, but most performers don't start that young. But at some point you made the decision, obviously you started with classical music, you clearly made the decision to embrace what I would say jazz, and almost more importantly, the Great American Songbook. So when did that happen?
I got that gig I was 13. I was at the clubhouse in the neighborhood, you know, in the neighborhood we lived. It was a gated community in Florida, you know, and there was a clubhouse, it was a tennis with all the tennis courts and everything. And I played for the Wednesday night buffet. Like it was $20 for 2 hours, I think. And I was playing all this classical stuff, like Chopin and Mozart, and that's the stuff I knew. I knew one song that I'd found in these fake books that were in the bench of the family piano bench.
Right.
It was the St. Louis Blues, and that was W.C. Handy, and that was the first time I ever played like jazz piano, if you want to, you know. So I played a little bit of that too, the way I thought it should be. But you know, I was raised technically by my grandparents. I was adopted, and so I was, you know, around some. They were a little older to have a son my age, you know. So I was around some great music and some great things. My dad was born in 1928, you know. So he grew up with the music, and I was around Bobby Darin and Sinatra on the radio, and I have great memories of listening to Bobby Darin with my dad. And
well,
mom always had jazz on the Sunday. You know, like on NPR, she'd be cleaning the house and she'd have the Sunday, they had a jazz brunch they would do every Sunday in NPR some many years ago. I always remember hearing that flowing through the house, and, you know, that's when I got the bug. Yeah.
Your dad introduced you to Bobby Darin with the albums, I guess, huh?
Yeah. I remember that he kind of gave me, or he had a Bobby Darin compilation CD.
Right.
And it would be on in the car all the time, and a couple of Harry Connick Jr. records, you know, but my mom always wanted me to pretty much do the classical piano thing. And my dad was the, you know, so if my dad would take me to, you know, if my mom would take me to the piano lessons, it would be like Vladimir Horowitz, who I loved, the right. pianist, and like Madame Butterfly and things like that. But if my dad drove me to the piano lesson, it would be Bobby Darin, Harry Connick Jr., and like Paul Harvey and the rest of the story, you know, things like, it was a very like two-sided thing, but it was, both sides were great. It was great though. And that's, you know, I grew up singing, you know, Clementine walking to the bus stop, you know,
right.
or Mac the Knife or something, you know, and that led to discovering all the other wonderful composers and songbook music.
Yeah. And I want to talk to you about that in a second. If it's not too personal, you mentioned your mom and dad, but then you were raised by your grandparents. So there was,
well, when I refer to my mom and dad, I'm referring to them.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry not to be confused. Yeah.
Yeah, I was, but that's just me. I get confused easily. So I love the fact that you got exposed to both ends of things. That's a great way to look at it, especially with the Paul Harvey reference, which a lot of people won't get, but I enjoyed that one. And that's the rest of the story.
That's right. That's right.
So, but at some point you decided, okay, I have to make a choice here. And I let me tell you my first impression of you, or not of you right this moment, but of knowing of you and watching you and now talking with you. Is that you almost have and it's not to be patronizing, but there's almost an organic jazz feel about you.
I love that.
If I looked at you and talked to you, it wouldn't say Mozart.
I got you. Yeah. That is true. That is not what I'm about these days.
Right.
Of course I don't study classical music anymore, but I certainly don't mind a little bit of classical music. You know.
When you've been doing this for a long time, when I say doing this, performing a long time, so it's not as if you just started in the business. You've been a craftsman and working at it day by day, night by night, doing all kinds of gigs. I introduced you in terms of you're also a band leader as well. So you've got all these things going for you at the same time. I guess I want to go back to the original question about the Great American Songbook. What is it? And I've refrained over several months asking a guest this, but you're perfect for it. What is it about the Great American Songbook that endures through all the decades? Because there are various versions of songs that were originally written by, you know, Cole Porter and George and Ira Gershwin and others. And yet, and there's jazz interpretations, there's other kinds of interpretations, but the basic melody and lyrics remain.
Mm-hmm.
What is it about that sticks? Well, let's make it personal. What sticks in your mind, in your soul, that this is what you're committed to?
There's the melodies are timeless, for one thing. They're the kind of melodies that you can always hum. They're easy to hum, and they're beautiful, all of them. And then paired with lyrics, you know, I mean, for me, lyrics really make the melody come alive. Again, hand in hand, you know, two instruments and, you know, together, the voice and the piano, but I guess the lyrics and the melody, you know, some of the greatest lyrics ever written that I think are timeless and can still be applied today, as well as people that literally grew up with this music when the music was actually new.
Mm-hmm.
I think it could take them back to a place that they love every time they hear it. So I think it can connect, you know, young and old and everybody. And I think it'll continue to do that forever. People like stuff they can hum, and they'll continue to hum it. And they love lyrics they can connect with, and that make them feel something. That's what's important, and that's what music does. And it's,
I mean, you can make the,
it's pretty magical.
It is, but you could make the case for certain pop music from the 60s that you can sing to or hum to, and they'll stay popular for a while and maybe into the next generation. But the Great American Songbook is already from, if you go start maybe the 30s up to now, that's quite a few decades that it still has an impact. And I guess what I'm trying to ask, and I still haven't formulated the question in my mind the best way, but was there something unique about that period of time that it generated that kind of talent and that kind of writing and composing?
You know, I don't know.
From your point of view, obviously.
From my point of view, you know, a lot of this stuff was written around wartime, too. Not all of it, of course, but a lot of it was. And that sentiment of the wives at home and they're missing their loved ones, and the soldiers overseas missing their loved ones, generated a lot of very heartfelt and deep emotional lyrics, you know. Right. But there's also the other side, some of the happy things that they needed to, people were trying to be happy as well, through musical song and theater. And there was some really funny bits. Gershwin wrote a lot of funny bits, you know, the Gershwins. I don't know. It's, I don't know if there's something about the time, but it's just something that happened. I haven't really thought too much about why, or, you know, that time period might have that much of effect on it, but it was the music of the day, you know.
Right, exactly. Clearly you weren't there at the time, your grandparents were perhaps, but when you hear it for the first time, when you start to hear it as a young man, the first time, some of the songs that you're, in fact, it's a lot of them are on your current album again called Make Someone Happy, which you can go to, of course, DannySinoffMusic.com, find out all about that. But when you first heard some of these songs, did it evoke in you a sense of place and time, or was it just that you enjoyed, as you mentioned, the melody and the lyrics?
There's something that the music made me feel. There was something that grabbed me about it. Whether, I don't know if it was, especially with swing, the power of the way jazz and swing, make, the actual swing makes you feel. There was something about it that was just different to me. And, you know, at the same time, I was playing guitar and drums, and I was being a teenager playing in rock bands, and you know, in the mid 90s, you know, in through middle school and things. But I always came back around to that music for some reason. You know, I there was something about it that lived in me, if you will. It sounds a little cliche, but that's the only way I could really put it. It does live. You know, it's something that I truly feel. You know, and there's not many things in life that you can truly feel, but this is one of them for me.
Well, I think that goes back to what I said about you earlier, that I got the sense of you that you just organically are a jazz person and a Great American Song person. It's not artifice. It's just part of you.
When I put on an album and listen to it, or I'm at a live performance, or to take it even farther, when we're actually performing, there's a certain feeling you get, and I'm not sure everybody gets that feeling the same way, you know? And I think that's what separates us who love this music and those who, you know, tolerate it or whatever, you know, or whatever. You know what I mean? Yeah, I don't know. I probably could have worded that better. But I think you understand what I mean.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I want to mention again that Danny's going to be at VIX Las Vegas May 1st and 2nd at 7:30 and 9. And you can go to VIXLasVegas.com for information. And as well as, of course, Danny's a website as well for the album information and a lot more that's on there. When you decided to, I want to shift to your album for just a second. I mentioned it a moment ago, Make Someone Happy. And Benny's on that album with you. When you decided to put that together, how did you go through, again, the catalog for the Great American Songbook is extensive. So you had to make choices in terms of what you wanted in there. How did you make that decision in terms of what was to go in it?
Well, I was working with my producer, Ulysses Owens Jr., the great drummer and great producer. And I had a list about this long, you know. we were trying to brainstorm. He said, look, man, this is not a set list. This is an album. You know, it's so, we tried to pick things that were a little bit different. just to say, you know, everyone's recorded the way you look tonight. Everyone's recorded, I've got a crush on you, and so forth. What we tried to pick some things that were a little bit off the beaten path, but still standards and things that we made very interesting. They're all my arrangements except for, you know, except for Benny Benack. Everything else is my arrangement on there. And it's sort of what I've come up with over the last 25 years of playing these tunes. These arrangements is what have come together. But we tried to pick things that were a little bit less recorded, I suppose, instead of just making a record of standards, you know, they really did end up telling a story, and the order of the album is important. It kind of takes you on this really neat little journey through the album, and I'm really, really happy with it. But I'd had a list about this long, which we've made down, and we pared it down. He's like, we went through a process. I'll just put it that way.
Yeah, no, I get you.
And it came out fine. And I also, I take it back about the arrangements, because there's one tune on there where it's just myself singing and Dan Wilson, the great guitarist, playing, and we did a duet. I can just tell you, it's I Left My Heart in San Francisco is on the album, which is a tune that I never thought I would record. You know what I mean? Tony Bennett's done it. I will say it's his in a way,
right?
You know, but Dan Wilson brought it to the rehearsal and he's like, what do you think of this? And he started playing this Brazilian kind of really light rhythm on the guitar, almost a samba. And it was really light. And it was just me singing that tune with the guitar. And I loved it so much that I said, this is amazing. We went in and we recorded it. And that's how that came about. You know, I never thought, you know, on my, you know, here's my debut album. You know, I have all these tunes that I've been doing I can pick from. I didn't think that that tune would be on the album. There's also an Elton John tune on the album. Actually, there is, which I didn't know. I'll admit, I didn't know it was Elton John until I researched the tune. I heard Bill Henderson sing it. I don't know if you know the singer Bill Henderson, mm-hmm. but he did an album called Live at the Vic, not Vic's, but at the Vic. I don't remember where the Vic, it might be, I don't remember what, I'm not going to speak about that. But I heard this tune and I said, this is a great song. I need to find out about this song. And I found out it's an Elton John tune. It's called Sorry Seems to Be the Hardest Word. That's also on the album. Again, I never thought I'd ever have that on my opening record, but it's on there. And all these tunes together have really made this great. I'm so happy with this album, you know. It's a great album. I'm so proud of it. Make someone happy. Make just one someone happy.
When you recorded it, was there a little bit of a difference for you in the sense that you're very used to performing in front of audiences, live performance? Here you are in a recording studio, and yes, you could have people sitting and watching you that are not part of the process, separate from the engineer and the producer, but it's still a controlled environment, and you're recording.
It's definitely a different process. It feels very different. The music is the same, you know, but one thing I did do, and I've been in the studio in the past, not on this sort of level exactly, but what I did find and what I will continue to do is that I always come to a recording session and I'm in a suit, because when I perform, I'm in a suit, and it's just, it's part of what I do and it's how I feel most comfortable with the music. I was in a session once and I was just in jeans and like a t-shirt and I felt very awkward singing and playing. So I decided I'm not going to do that anymore. And I came in and I always come in a suit, and that helps me sort of get into my mode of performing and connecting and all of that sort of thing. Just by what I'm wearing, I feel very comfortable in that. And that's very helpful for me anyways in the studio.
Do you think that it elevates your performance from your point of view, meaning part of what your mentality is that when I'm wearing a suit, I'm paying respect to the music and therefore I'm paying respect to the audience. And in the case of a recording studio, you're paying respect to the people that are there and to the listeners that are going to hear it once it's out.
For me, it does. And that doesn't apply to everybody, but for me, it certainly does. I feel a certain way when I'm dressed a certain way. And I think maybe that's a throwback to some of the olden days too, when Sinatra would always show up, you know, and people can go whatever they want to the studio. It doesn't bother me, but you know, Sinatra would show up in a, in a suit and a hat and a tie and a or any of those guys, Darren or Bennett or whoever it was. I mean, these are all the male singers. I don't know some of the female singers. I'm sure they showed up in whatever their elegant dress or whatever they have. You know, I think it's a certain respect to the music. Not saying people that don't do it are disrespecting anything.
No, it's your approach. That's what
it's my approach. Yeah, and it makes me feel a certain way, and it makes me sing a certain way. I think.
I agree. I think it sets a tone.
Definitely, definitely.
Whether you're recording or you're in front of a live audience, you mentioned about the residency in Florida. Do you think down the road you would like to have some sort of residency in Las Vegas? It's a different vibe than Florida, clearly, but.
Sure, at the right venue. Sure. I've only been out to Vegas one other time so far, and that was very recently, just a few weeks ago, 2 weeks ago. So,
and how much did you lose?
What's that?
And how much did you lose?
Hell, I was not getting into that. I do like to play blackjack. We're not going to get into that. But I don't know a whole lot about Las Vegas yet, but I will tell you that it's got a very special energy.
Oh, yes.
I hadn't been out there before until recently, as I said, and I immediately felt a different sort of energy out there. A residency in Vegas? Sure. Let's talk about that.
All right. No, I'm always, because the fact that when you have a residency and you're at a certain level, that you're almost it's almost a built in, I don't want to use the word package. That's not what I'm going for. But in other words, you have something that's already established. Maybe that's the way to say it. And so it's a lot easier for an entertainment director at a hotel or a casino to book someone that has an established residency elsewhere or had one, so they know that they can do that on an ongoing basis. That would be kind of cool.
Well, I've been playing supper clubs and sort of restaurant venues and things here in Florida for 25 years. I've performed at every major spot here, and I've had a lot of time to hone my craft in singing these tunes and presenting them in that sort of way. I don't know. It's
something to think about anyway.
Sure. Why not? I mean, I'm doing, I've been in Florida, like I said, a long time. Sure. I'm just now getting to New York and Philadelphia, Las Vegas.
Less humidity here. So.
Yeah. But you know what? It doesn't feel dry, but I noticed like my lips were getting dry.
Yeah.
Here's
a little tip in case Benny didn't tell you, is that if you can get a humidifier to use in your hotel room while you're staying here, and maybe even on stage, it helps too. But a lot of performers use a humidifier to keep, it's called Vegas throat. It's like, if you're here too long, there's this dryness that takes over in your.
I felt it within the first day. Yeah
exactly.
I do have a nebulizer. I use a thing called Vocal Mist. I'm trying to endorse them real quick, but it's.
Oh, okay. That's fine.
For singers. I don't work for Vocal Mist, but I love their little product. It's a little nebulizer that has special saline solution you put in it, and it goes right to the vocal cords. And you can, they have a mask too that can,
interesting.
You know, you can breathe it in.
Boy, I learn something new every day. I'm that glad.
It's this big. You put it in your suitcase.
No, hopefully some of the entertainers listening and watching will take that tip. I like that. Is Benny coming out for your debut?
He is not going to, no, he's, as Benny does, he's somewhere else on the planet at all moments. Who knows where it is.
All right.
But so he won't be out for this one. He'll be out, for his own thing just after, I think.
Right.
But maybe one of these times, hopefully I come back to Vix after this and,
oh, I'm sure you will.
Well, me and Benny could do something. Certainly.
Yeah. Although I don't book for Vix, so I just assume that.
No, I got you. Yeah. So this time though, it's a bass player I haven't met yet, but I've heard a lot about and we've spoken, Steve Flora playing bass.
Good.
I'm sure you Las Vegas guys probably know about Steve. And my good friend, the great drummer, Mr. Aaron Kimmel, is coming out from New York.
Excellent.
To play drums. So it's going to be a great trio. I'm really looking forward to it.
I'm glad you mentioned their names. A lot of times if I know someone's coming out with a trio or a duo or quartet, as I always like to have a little shout out to the other supporting players.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Great musicians.
Now, is Paul Harvey coming out?
Well, I don't know. He might have a little trouble.
Yeah, true.
That would how great would that be, though?
Yeah, that would be good. I think Paul Harvey Jr. could come out. That would be really nice. So
I wasn't even sure there was a Paul. Okay.
Yeah, there is.
So, sure about
when you decided to focus on jazz and the Great American Songbook, did you know that you would be consistently successful with it? You've been working all the time for obviously a long time, more than 20 years, but Did you know you would be successful, or did you just say, this is what I want to do? It may take a while, but I just got to do this.
I don't think it's something that I planned, but I realized at some point that I could actually do this, you know? And I knew I wanted to do it. I think as soon as I saw Harry Connick Jr. on Saturday Night Live, I thought that was with the big band. I thought that was the coolest thing I'd ever seen. So I started trying to sing and play, and I did start to sing and play. Eventually it turned into like actually getting paid for it. And I said, wait a minute, I can actually do this. And I got together with some of the other guys and, you know, we put a band together and I started singing and playing sort of for real. And, just learning about how to, I didn't know how to play gigs. You know, that's something that you don't, you know, you just go and do it and you learn how to do it. And I eventually learned that I can really do this. And that's all I've pretty much ever done. I've had a couple of other jobs, you know, but all I've ever really done is play music for a living.
Well, it sounds like you broke out of the buffet at the clubhouse and went to obviously a wider world.
Well, that was my first experience on any gig, you know, and it's to say that's not that much different than any other gig today. You know, it all kind of still works the same.
Yeah, that's, you know? True. That's true.
So, yeah. Yeah.
You've performed all over the place. Was there one venue? Because it's not that you get jaded, but you get used to performing in various venues as a full-time performer. Is there one particular venue that you remember that's very memorable to you?
Around here or anywhere?
Anywhere.
Well, I mean, I haven't played that many places. A venue that is memorable to me. I mean, I've had some great shows down here at the Tribby Arts Center. I'll be there. I'm doing my album release show there in just a few weeks, just after VIX, actually, on May 12th.
Of all your songs that you perform, including the album, but in addition to the album, your favorite song, if you were forced to reveal your favorite song to perform.
My favorite song to perform. Oh, boy. I don't think I could name, but if I had to name one particular song.
Oh, if you can't, you can't. I like the honesty. If you can't,
there's just too many great tunes.
Yeah.
But I will tell you one thing is I love to sing ballads. I love singing ballads. Make Someone Happy is a wonderful song with the title track on my album. I love singing that song. I love singing any great ballad. I mean, I don't know if anyone else has done this, but if you've ever almost made yourself cry by what you're singing, you know what I mean? Like, that's how much I connect with the feeling of the music and the words together. And then if I'm singing and any one of those songs, especially if it's a song that's very close to me, and I see an audience member connecting as well, it takes me a little bit to try not to lose it myself, you know?
There's a connection right there.
There's a connection. Yeah. And when I sing those songs, those are my favorite songs.
Well, that's a great way to leave it.
I guess that's the best way I can put it. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was great. My guest has been Danny Sinoff. He's bringing his signature sound to VIX Las Vegas this Friday and Saturday, May 1st and 2nd, at 7:30 and 9. And for reservations, go to vixlasvegas.com. And for everything about Danny, go to dannysinoffmusic.com. You can follow him on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. And his new album, of course, is Make Someone Happy. And Danny, thanks for being on the show.
My pleasure. Ira, thank you.
Thank you. See you next time.
Make someone happy. Make just one someone happy.
You've been listening to Talk About Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. Hey, Las Vegas.